podcasting from Alexandria, Virginia, just a few miles from Washington, D.C., where we all hope doing what is right the first time is everyone's top priority. This is Software Quality Today, presented by Procellarex, a podcast about the trends and challenges of software quality testing and computerized system validation, and the people who are leading the way. Hear interviews with special guests and news from customers and vendors. I'm your host, Dori Gonzalez-Acevedo, and welcome to today's episode.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Software Quality Today. This episode, Dori welcomes a very special guest, Rashmi Rao, and it was recorded as a special edition of the Women in CSV Coffee Break and broadcasted as a webinar titled From Silicon Valley to Health Alley, a Tech Pro's Healthcare Journey. They cover a variety of topics, including the transformative power of female empowerment in STEM, crucial insights on integrating technology across diverse sectors, strategies for scaling startups and navigating venture capital, the importance of community, health equity, and advocating for women's rights, leadership philosophies and the art of building industry partnerships, as well as the origin of healthcare, health tech, life sciences, wellness, and fitness, HLWF Alliance, and what they have in store for the future. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into the episode.
All right. Well, it seems like, because we have a lot to talk about and we can talk for more than just an hour. So I'm going to get started. As you all know, this is a special recording and day-to-day for women in CSV for a coffee break. It's also going to be a live episode recorded for Software Quality Today. It is in service of International Women's Day and Women's History Month of March. And I am so excited to bring my friend and colleague, Rashmi Rao, to you all. Because like as soon as we start talking, you're going to absolutely know why I'm doing work with her on a regular basis and all the fun and amazing things and how passionate she is about things. So to get started, I'm going to give us Rashmi's brief bio for you all. Okay, so Rashmi is an accomplished entrepreneur and innovator with over 40 patents and a proven track record of consumer, automotive, and healthcare industry, building new businesses with over $500 million in revenue. She's held business and product leadership roles at Qualcomm, Apple, Harman Sensong, and Philips, and continues to push the innovation and sustainability, leveraging technology advancements to improve people's lives. Rashmi is passionate about STEM advocacy with a focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion, which again, shouldn't surprise you because that's my passion too. Especially though in the technology sector, she is the founder of the nonprofit Healthcare, Life Science, Wellness, and Fitness, HLWF Alliance, which I'm also a founding member. This foundation is born of her lived experience and is dedicated to bringing the gaps within our current health system to light. So with that, I am going to give you a moment, Rashmi, to elaborate on that, because that doesn't even scratch the surface of the things that you've done in your life.
Oh, thank you so much. First of all, thank you for inviting me here, Dori. We've known each other for a bit and I'm just as big a fan. So I just think of this as a conversation more than anything else. And doing this in March in recognition of the Women's History Month, I think is wonderful. There is so much happening in the world today. And I feel like we are, you know, if we have a platform, we must speak. And in that way, you and I are so similar in terms of advocacy. And I think that that kind of brought us together. So today, you know, I'm just looking forward to having a conversation, coffee break with you and all of your wonderful audience.
Wonderful. So because, you know, we have known each other for a while, but I actually really don't know all of your roots. So can you tell us a little bit about like how you came, like what is the story of Rashmi?
Yeah. So I grew up in India. I have a twin sister, and most people ask me why I ended up in healthcare, and I'm not a doctor. And so this is a story. This is the origin story of it all. My mother, as pretty much most Asian people, she wanted my sister and I to become doctors, to possibly marry doctors, and like start a big hospital system in India and just be like this famous doctor family. Mm-hmm. And my sister did all of that. And I did none of it. And I tell people that I ended up in healthcare because my mom has been manifesting it for like so long. So it for so many years, in fact. But I'm a consummate problem solver, and I've always been that way. But as I reflect back, I look at, you know, my mom, who was a working mom in those days in India, which was not very common. And even today, like the things that she did and balanced work and home, I cannot even imagine doing it. Mm-hmm. My aunts worked, and my grandmother, she had her own stitching and garment business. And so she was kind of the OG hustler of us all. And so as I reflect back, I realize that my sister, all our cousins, we kind of grew up in this cocoon of like female brilliance that and presence that has truly shaped how we grew up in what our core values have been and what we want to advocate for. And so as I entered, you know, engineering and technology, in fact, many times found myself as being the one and only, I constantly reminded myself that I come from a lineage of really amazing women who have, you know, been vocal and have created space for themselves and made change exactly where they were. And so I drew strength from that. And I've just been very fortunate to get all the opportunities. But I think without kind of coming from where I came from and having that kind of presence, female presence from the very, very beginning, I don't think I would have done half the things that I've done today.
Nice. It's I know your sister lives down under, right? So it's like also two like totally polar opposite sort of in that regard, which is very, very interesting. I know that for me, I've stayed in the life science space for my entire career. I'm biochemist by education, chemist, organic chemist, developed drugs, and I stayed in this space. It feels very comfortable to me. I'm, you know, kind of now can say I'm an expert in this particular field that I do. You've, though, held positions in three distinct, very different fields, right? So consumer products or consumer electronics specifically, right? Automotive and healthcare. And I'm wondering, how did you do that? And what, is there any challenges in that in your leadership side? Have you changed? Like that's a difficult jump to do.
For me,
it's a difficult job.
Yeah. And honestly, people ask me about it, and it was, none of it was really planned. But I always believe that there is nothing to fear in life. It only is just waiting for you to understand it. Even as I've done these, multiple jumps through the different industries, it's always been centered around, using and leveraging technology to make things better for users, for individuals, for, drivers, and now for patients. And that's kind of common. And, there are differences between the industries. Let's not just pretend like it's all the same, because it is not. In consumer, it's all about rapid innovation and break things and quick, learn quick and fail fast and things like that. In automotive, it's very much around reliability and safety. And what I'm learning, as I've now been in healthcare for a while, it's profoundly about impacting lives at a very, very personal level. Right. So even as we take those tools across all of these industries, what I've taken for me is that the applications are very, very different. And for me, I like I said, there is my philosophy has been there's never a bad day to have a good idea. And so what you need to do is, once you have that idea, right, what do you do with it? Like, how do you take it to be much bigger than just yourself? And that's kind of how I've approached every space. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like I've been in three different rooms that are having very similar conversations. Mm-hmm. They might not be the same, but they're very similar. When it most of the things that I've been involved in, whether it was, you know, bringing connectivity to cars or taking a very user-centered approach to consumer electronic design. Mm-hmm. And now I'm in this room of healthcare where I'm bringing those conversations that I've had in the past, but I'm also trying to understand the context that we have and the conversations that are happening here. So I would highly recommend it. A portfolio of impact is how I think of it versus, I can genuinely tell you that none of it was planned. It has just happened this way.
So in that move from technology to and bringing the technology to the healthcare space, I know the HLWF and we've been talking about this for over a year now, right? The interconnectivity of all of those different spaces. What are some of the things that you find that has surprised you over the last year that we've kind of discovered through this process?
Yeah, you know, and as you mentioned, the origin of HLWF and even meeting you from the life sciences spaces and, you know, me coming from the tech space and our amazing community that we now have with HLWF is really about bringing very different and diverse voices together in that same room, right? And what has surprised me the most is that we all think we understand each other, but when we are all in the same room, you can't understand each other if you're speaking different languages, right? Mm-hmm. And today, when I think of myself, I can't like separate myself as, you know, this is about consumer experience, or this is about employee benefit, or this is about patient, you know, care. I am all of those. I occupy the space of a patient and an employee and a consumer every single day. And so how can we have those conversations in silos, right? And if we are having those conversations in silos, then we are definitely missing important aspects of it. And without having jumped across these three different rooms that I said, I don't think I would have even, you know, thought it would be a concept that we can bring like very, very diverse. Mm-hmm. But I realized that, you know, we are having very similar conversations. And what has surprised me the most, number one, it's a women-focused group and we have amazing women. And so that has been surprise and delight. Mm-hmm. Just meeting just amazingly qualified women who are very passionate about their causes and now are opening up their minds to also learn about other aspects of health and well-being.
Yeah. And I can experience the connectivity between the two, like how much I've learned in the last year from building the community at HLWF, right? And now we have a resource pool that continues to expand, right? And so I think that was part of your vision, but I am not sure how you thought that was going to go so fast. Maybe you want to talk about, so what was your original vision for that?
Yeah. So as you know, we started off with basically saying, hey, you're an expert in X. So why don't you tell us about your expertise, right? And that's where we first started, because it was about bringing people to the room and just saying, share your expertise, because it was a platform, again, you know, as most things happen in life, you can imagine certain things, but the serendipity aspect of bringing amazing people, you cannot plan for that at all, mm-hmm. right? And so that was the goal, to say, hey, you're an expert in this. Tell us a little bit more. Let's learn from you. And what that then transpired into was clearly seeing some of the gaps. And especially as, you know, there is so much conversation around us happening about moving from sort of fee-based services to value-based services, or this rapid disruption of AI that happened kind of parallelly to us growing HLWF. Mm-hmm. And now there are so many elements and aspects of both the patient experience and consumer experience and mental health and employee that is all coming together. Mm-hmm. And so we couldn't have planned for any of that. But the origin was really to bring really expert women, give them a platform and say, talk about what is your expertise. What it has become really is this amazing community that is, you know, has its own DNA. It's growing up with its own, you know, kind of origin. And it's much, much bigger than any individual, any one individual amongst us, right? And that's the best part. And I don't think we can plan for it. Just, we can just be on the ride. That's it.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't surprise me. You know, again, some things that you and I have done in our lives are very, very similar. So from an entrepreneurial and startup way, you've also have done lots of startup to scale operations. I've also done startup to scale operations. What are, let's talk about specifically, so you've successfully navigated the startup ecosystem and the venture capital world. This is a part of this conversation that I know very little about, okay? So I'm curious, like, what key lessons have you learned in scaling up innovations from concept to market when you have all these, this new way of talking? Because again, I don't know the venture capital market, like how to talk that. Like that's a whole different skill set, which I don't want to acquire.
Yeah. And I've been in different stages of my professional journey for each of those. And so I've seen it from multiple angles. There are certain angles of that I love. And there are certain angles of that I am trying to change. And I think all of us can be a part of that change. And I'll start with this premise that before the pandemic in 2019, 4%, only 4% of the entire venture capital funding in the world, and you know, bulk of it is in the US, went to women founders. Only 4%. And last year, after the pandemic, it is only 1.8%. So we are not moving the needle in the right direction at all when it comes to women-founded startups. And I specifically say that because, of course, we're in this conversation in Women's History Month, and you know, the focus is all of this. But the biggest aspect is if we don't have those diverse voices, we are definitely not building technology. And that has been my personal experience. So my first startup, I was the eighth employee in a startup in San Francisco. I was this very young graduate student who had got the opportunity to move to San Francisco. And so I couldn't have asked for a better start. It was wonderful. It was, again, in the spaces that I love. It was MEMS, micro electromechanical systems. So building things, which I just, you know, I've always been very hands-on in building things. And about 6 months into me joining the startup, Qualcomm acquired us. And I'm going to date myself a little bit here, but this was pre-iPhone, pre-YouTube. And so Qualcomm at that time had a company called MediaFlow, MediaFlo, and they were trying to stream video content onto mobile devices. And this was early 2000s. So way ahead of their time, there was not enough bandwidth, there was not enough 3G, 4G, 5G infrastructure, and there were definitely no devices. So they acquired this company that I was a part of, the startup called Iridium, to build technology that would be, you know, consuming very less power. So that was one of my personal passions in terms of sustainability. That's why I joined the startup. It was 1/10 the power of what mobile phones were using in those days. And also to stream video content that could be viewed everywhere, right? So I go and I join the startup, you know, have an amazing exit. But 10 years, fast forward 10 years, things that we couldn't control completely changed the market dynamics, right? And as an engineer, as a, you know, person that started from the very beginning, I think I stayed there for a bit too long because I was just very bullish and very like, I can change the world. I can do this, right? And so a million in change, a billion in change later, And I did an expat in Taiwan. I mean, I did all sorts of like crazy things to make this a reality. We were not as successful as we wanted to be. Mm-hmm. It was very, very hard at that time. But I cannot thank that experience because I learned so much about the decisions that can go wrong. And it's not just about a good idea. It's a lot about execution and also managing that expectations of venture capitals, right? Like how do you, because it's all about 400x growth and all of that. So how do you balance what you want to build as a founder with the aspirations of the people that you are borrowing the dollars
from? Yeah, which leads into an interesting kind of thought around before we started today. We were talking about innovation and being an inventor. And so you're an inventor. I've taught innovation to young folks, right? And there's how to know what is the right problem that you're trying to solve? And is it worth solving? Is it worth investing? Like, is it worth going down that path? Is passion enough? Is the greater good enough? Or is there some other way in which you kind of talk about that or figure that out for as you go through the process?
Yeah. And I think it's very personal, and it should be, you know, every individual's, right? Because success can mean so many different things. Success is not just money. Success can be impact. Success can be, you know, really impacting and changing people's lives. For me, I was always driven with seeing like my things that I had worked on in people's hands, in millions of people's hands. That was always for me the sign of success, because I'm like, now I'm in their lives every day. So I've used what I can and the tools that I've been given to like really make this like tiny impact. They might not know me, but I know that I impacted them, kind of a thing. But that was very personal to me, right? And so now in healthcare, I think it's very important that we don't pander to the existing systems. And I have so much hope for the coming generation, because they see things very differently. And I see this in my 12-year-old, and, you know, you and I spoke a little bit about, you know, your son as well. And so they see the world in a very global way, and they think of issues in a very global way. And so I have so much hope for them, but I think we need to guide them in terms of not pandering to the current status quo
system, which leads me to like the big topic that I know you and I are very passionate about. We want to talk about global health diplomacy, right? We want to talk about equity, inclusion. What does that mean? And so a lot of what you do today intersects with all of those areas, right? They intersect with public health, public policy. You have a lot of passion around this as well. What are some of the things that you think we can leverage in making it more inclusive or more equitable in this process?
Thank you for asking me that, because it's a very personal thing for me in terms of, you know, health equity, right? And navigating this U.S. health system as a woman of color, I've learned so much to not dismiss what I'm feeling, to kind of pay attention to my body and what my gut is telling me versus only what I'm hearing. And, you know, women are not tiny men. So the medications that work for men, you know, I'm not just going to take smaller versions of it. There's just so many things that are kind of foundational in how the U.S. Healthcare system was set up, right? But also we are seeing a lot of changes. And I feel, you know, this is a circle that we should speak about these topics. I feel like we are moving, in a direction where maybe our daughters, our next generation is going to have less freedom than we grew up with. And I know I can't just stick around seeing that happening. Mm-hmm. And my goals are very big, but I also look at it from an impact perspective. So, you know, I don't need to make this change for millions of people. As I've matured, I kind of have learned that impact you individually don't have to like always build this big thing that impacts the entire world. You can make where you
there's
are.
There's levels and shifts of impact, and there's a ripple effect that can occur as we make those transformations, right? And starting small, and it is contagious, and we all know this, right? There's lots of studies around this, but and at the same time, there's much bigger powers to be that are continuing to take away women's rights, unfortunately, right? And so, and how can we leverage some of the technology to make that a more inclusive sort of conversation?
I've come up with this thing called Tequity.
Tequity. Oh, okay. Tell me more.
Equity, right? Mm-hmm. And it's catching on in a lot of places. And I really feel that technology has been a leveler in so many industries. We've seen that in the last decade. And mm-hmm. it can be very disruptive, right? Social media is an example. Mm-hmm. We can now put our views out there without having being censored, or only the few on the top having the voice or the mm-hmm. mic. In a similar way, I truly believe that tech equity from a healthcare perspective is very much possible. And today was a milestone day in it, because the UN, the United Nations General Assembly, just ratified the resolution around artificial intelligence. And they have made it very, very, very clear in what that means for the next steps for AI. It's about focusing on not, having people be socially surveyed and mass surveying of people, surveillance of people, which we know happens in many countries, including the United States, right? But also focusing on sustainable goals and ensuring that we are not leaving any country behind. So this was about 193 countries. When you talk of those big, top-down things, this is a milestone, and it happened today. It literally happened this morning, right? So things like that, where we can also see the changes, we need some of that framework. But from our perspective, right, as we are working through HLWF Alliance, my goal is broadly educating all of the different silos. And there is a lot of the intersections between these silos that we can impact with technology. For example, mental health, I think, has been a incredible runaway success through pandemic, right? Where being able to virtually get the care that you need mm-hmm. has been so impactful to so many people. Right. And you and I have spoken about it at some times as well. But as we build some of these technologies, particularly, at the moment, we're focused on artificial intelligence, because it can learn and it can take away some of the burden from having to have expertise and having to have physicians in like remote places and care deserts, right? You can still administer care without having to be physically present. And I see that as being, the number one priority. And through HLWF Alliance, that's what we're trying to do. As we build out the corpus of knowledge, it's about then being able to disseminate this knowledge into spaces where they might not have access to some of that.
It makes me think that, the women on the call today, women in CSV, right? Often we're working in a siloed space, or not necessarily, it could be in a quality space that's not talking to the tech space, right? And there's a lot of siloed organizations, as you are well aware, right? And one of the things that I try to help folks do is use the technology they have to the best of their ability to get those things done. But at the same time, we're also experiencing, you have to learn how to talk to one another, right? And I think that there's a misalignment of thinking that either we're going to bring in some generative AI or we're going to bring some another fancy tool, and that's going to quote unquote solve the problem. But the problem is the people, right? We need to be able to communicate. We need to be able to talk to one another in a different way. And so one of the things I love about what the HLWF Alliance is bringing those different perspectives to the table. And I'm wondering, through that though, have you had to, like, how to get over that barrier of getting folks to actually want to participate in something new, right? Because breaking down those silos is hard work, right? You might be able to knock them down once, but it's like, it's an everyday sort of conversation to continue that pace of, so that there's actual ultimate change at the end, right? Like, it's a constant work. It's a practice. So do you have any, like, maybe a success story or some tidbits for us on how to try to do that?
Yeah. So I want to digress and just share this example from this past week. It's in my other role. I'm on the board of World Affairs Council, which is a state-sponsored sort of soft diplomacy group. And I'm on the board. And a part of what I do there is also to have these homestays for people from globally. So the U.S. State Department brings in folks from many different organizations from across the globe. And there's an opportunity to host them. And I do this because I learn more from actually hosting these people. And this past week, we had hosted somebody from Turkmenistan. And a part of what we do is take them out to lunch and dinners with the other local people, and they learn more about the U.S., mm-hmm. right? It's sort of soft diplomacy. And there was so much of concern and worry, which I had anticipated, but I had, didn't have the opportunity to discuss because it was Ramadan. And there is, you can only have dinner after sunset, and there is only, there's restrictions on what you can eat. But we had, it was something that I was aware of. So the host and I discussed this, and we organized it, and we didn't think that it should even be a problem. But then just that small aspect, when we hosted these people and they actually saw that there was that much effort that was made to accommodate them, and accommodate their culture and their practices, it kind of destroyed in just one dinner their perception of, the United States as being this big bad guy, mm-hmm. who's, going around the world with big guns, right? And I bring that example because that's what we are doing with HLWF Alliance. It doesn't have to be like the seismic thing that happens, but the butterfly effect of being able to bring. And so one of the examples I'd love to give was the event we hosted for International Women's Day, where we were speaking specifically about the fertility rights, mm-hmm. that are under attack in the U.S. And so we brought an actual pediatrician who's been practicing in administering for almost 35 years in this space. And we had a patient, an individual who had very personal, moving stories about, building a family through these fertility treatments. And I was there and another founding member. And so just being in that room and having that conversation, it was for an hour. But the momentum we've been able to create, of course, there was a lot of coverage for it, but the momentum we've been able to create after, we've just gotten started, and to see that we can mobilize that kind of energy around a topic is just fills me with hope. Mm-hmm. It just fills me with hope, Dori. And so for me, it's about bringing that ethos of, what WAC is doing, the World Affairs Council is doing for global diplomacy, into this aspect of breaking the silos. And as you put these people together, when you see that you're hearing each other's concerns and you're not dismissing it, mm-hmm. just because I'm a patient doesn't mean that I don't understand, the science behind it, or I don't need to understand the science behind it, for example.
One of the things that I'm just formulating in my mind as you're talking is, in my space, we do have some inter-industry regulatory private, kind of connections that we call consortiums of different kinds. How do you see, do you have any vision of actually bringing in industry into the HLWF alliance?
Absolutely. And as we build out, I think the change can only happen when you put this out there, and you also need buy-in. So, I'm going to quote my favorite RBG here. And, she always said that work on things that you are passionate about, but do it in a way where you bring people along, mm-hmm. right? And that is the goal. It's not about isolating. It's not about, I win, you don't. It's about how can we all win. And so, yes, the language for the industry will be different because, they're for profit. Mm-hmm. We are nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And so how do you make it a win-win for both? I think we'll have to come up with that right framework. But without that kind of partnerships, the scale is not possible at all, right? And so I'm very, very, very happy to see some of the focus, that many of these big organizations are now doing, whether it's just giving their tools and their software and their services to nonprofits, but they, Amazon has something similar, Microsoft has something similar, but they also have big foundations right. that are willing to support not-for-profit organizations. And they are all also very much looking at how can they be a part of this tech-quity aspect, right? Because they do tech very well, and they haven't had a great track record of equity. Right. So, partnering with somebody that is focused on that aspect, I think, bodes well for both sides.
Yeah. So I was wondering if you would share with us some of your leadership philosophy. We have, part of our Women in CSV group and part of the Software Quality Today podcast audience is a variety, right? There are folks that are just starting out in the industry, and then there's folks that are very senior and have been in the industry for a long time. Is there some aspects of your journey that you could impart on these women as we go through this?
Oh gosh. Okay. So like I said, I didn't plan, but I've had the self-discipline to go back and reflect and see what some of those things were. And I would say having a community, right, is top. And I've seen that, and I alluded to the community that I had when I was growing up, but then there was also a community when I was in undergrad, and we were about 9 girls in a class of 110. And, but we were a community. And even as I've gone into my professional group and things like that, there's always been a community. And so I think being very deliberate about reaching out and being in community is not about the get. It's about the give before you get, mm-hmm. right? And so if you do that, then you automatically have a group of people that will be willing to do and what it takes to make you successful, right? Mm-hmm. And also give you the tools and make the connections, open the doors, be your advocate when you cannot be in the room as well. But it takes effort, and it takes giving first, mm-hmm. And having that as top of mind. How can I help you? I think works. Best, and it has for me. And then I always look at paying it forward. Mm-hmm. Whatever I have received, I always look to can I give this same thing to more people? But also knowing that you have to have like this advisory council that I think of, mm-hmm. which is people that will actually poke holes.
Mm-hmm. The challenge.
Because the world will poke holes. The mm-hmm. world will poke holes. So. Curate that advisory council that you trust, the people, they have been in the field, have got knocked down, have come back up, and it doesn't have to be women alone. They can be men in your lives as well. But it's not just about you are amazing all the time, right? Because you know, you want somebody to tell you, I don't think this works.
Yes.
I don't think you should do it this way. Or I think you should wait before you send that nasty email. For you know, that might be
totally
talk you off the ledge.
Absolutely. Yep.
Right. And so having that is also important, because it's not just about kumbaya, we're all great and the world sucks and it's always because of the world, but some, you know, a group of people that you trust can also poke holes in you know,
I love that.
Speak the truth, real talk.
So I was gonna ask, so what do you think we need to ask of men in this conversation?
Men in the conversation. Do we have some in the audience?
No, I mean, so as a female leader, right? This is part of my continued learning and growing angst, right? Is I keep being asked for more and more and more and more and more, because like you said, I'm a giver, 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 giver. And at there's some point, right, that usually who's asking are the men in my circles, right? What do we need to, how can we change, or what's some thoughts around how we can change that dynamic? What do we need to ask of them in order for us to continue to want to give, right? And help and move and grow and move this needle a little bit.
Yeah. And I think it's important to set boundaries, especially when we are giving and we know that we're passionate about it. Because if it is, in this, I've learned this from experience, right? There are some people who are willing to, they're asking the question or they're asking for this because they want to understand, they want to learn, and they want to change.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others that are doing this because they just can. They know that you're passionate about this topic of DEI, that you'll say yes to this podcast, that you'll say yes to representing on a panel, and that they don't have to pay you, for example. And I'm just taking a very narrow example. And I think over time, you'll realize who those, you know, does this person fall into one of the categories or the others? And what I do, Dori, is at times I just put the ground rules and say, this is it. I draw the line here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes you're worth the time and the effort, because I know that this conversation will help you change. And in other times, it's just not going to. Right. And if it is not, then it's not, the burden is not on me to help continue to educate you, to give you my time, to give you all of that. Right. So that is it. That came with a little bit of learning. That came with a little bit of like
trial and error. Trial and error. Yeah. What are those boundaries? Boundaries are such a part of my everyday conversation these days for what's going on with my family life, right? Is, you know, who's responsible for what? Everyone contributing their part, right? And that in that collective, if everyone contributes their part, there's a lesser of a burden on everyone, right? And one can only hope that that is what we all aspire to, right? Is that each of us are carrying lesser of a burden over time, right? Because I don't think I speak for everyone, but I know that there's a lot of women out there that feel the burden and the burn, right? Very much, right? We're shouldering a lot, whether it's family life, career-wise, health-wise, right? You name it. And for the most part, in most communities, women are the center of that sustainability of that community, right? And we need an opportunity to have some respite as well, and how to get that, establishing boundaries, what those boundaries are, and how to ask for more from others when we can't, and vice versa, I think is really super important. I was wondering, I ask often
a little bit that it's a very simple thing, but it has made a huge difference for me in my life, and I can share it. So one of the things I've done now for this entire year is, so I start my day really early. I start my day at 5 a.m. And
I know I get texts that early from you on the West Coast.
Yeah. So one of the things for me was to take that 1 hour to do the things that I want to do, whether it's, you know, going into meditation, whether it's connecting with friends. But I don't do anything related to my work or anything that is kind of work, because I have so much work outside of my day job, right? And so, but they all can end up being work, whether it's the community stuff or things like that. So it took a little bit of, you know, effort to carve out those things that just are bringing joy and being peaceful. And it is not easy, but because I wake up really, I have, you know, I have a 3-year-old as well. And so, you know, I juggled a bunch of different things, but getting that, and some days it's an hour, some days it's just 30 minutes, but it has helped me sort of ground myself in the quality of my thoughts are so different and better because of that for the rest of the day. And I do something similar at the end of the night as well. And like I said, some days it's only 10 minutes before I go to bed or 30 minutes, and some days it's longer.
Yeah, I love it. So as we wrap up here, I would like to hear what you think are some predictions for the future. Like, what do you think is, you know, do you have some thoughts around like healthcare technology, kind of like where are we going? What do you think is going to happen?
I can give you the gloom and doom, but I don't want to.
No, I want to hear the hopeful.
Yeah. So for me, I think if we don't make some drastic changes, we can talk, you know, all day, all night, and nothing will change, right? Whether we're talking about AI, whether we're talking about GLP-1, you know, medications, whether, you know, we're talking about digital flourishing, any and all topics that impact the health or the pharma side of things or the well-being or our fitness, we will not be able to make progress if we don't make some drastic changes. And when I say drastic changes, it's changing the incentives, changing what are we tracking some of these very large companies on. And if that doesn't change, if their motivation for their bottom lines don't change, our lives, our health, and our well-being will not change, right? So if I want to predict, then I really do want to predict that some of those changes, you know, we can make, and we can only make that happen, not by sitting, you know, in our houses and fretting about it, but talking about it in the space, in your community, start in your house, and in your community, but every one of us has that capability. And when we all do it, we've seen that we can, you know, dramatically change and dramatically move those needles, right? So that's my hopeful prediction for the future, that people understand, because we are tracking our health more. We all have wearables. We all have home care in hospital at home. Yep. And that means we are more empowered to take charge of our health and well-being, which means that we will ask more of these companies that benefit from keeping us sick or treating us when we're sick versus, you know, keeping us healthy.
Right. I love it. I am going to open up. So if anyone has any questions that are on the phone, you're more than welcome to come off mute. I think you should be able to do that or raise your hands, and then I can bring you off mute. If you have a question or thoughts, we'd love to have those. I know that we just started our spring cohort at HLWF Alliance, and we are in our third week. I think that's correct.
Yeah.
For those of you that haven't seen, we publish weekly in Medium and a variety of other places, and I think it's really important for folks to expand also where they're getting their news and what they're reading. What's been remarkable to me is seeing what we're putting together, right? And then understanding even the writing process of where folks are getting sourced, where information is coming from. I think myself personally have maybe gotten a little lazy over the years of just, I used to read a lot of medical journals and I kind of stopped that. And now I'm kind of getting back into it again. And one of the things I like to do, I don't know, it sounds a little crazy, but that brings me peace and joy. But I encourage you guys to go out and read what we're writing about.
Thank you. Thank you, Dori. And that was the point. It was about also making it accessible to as many people as possible, right? And we have physicians writing, but we also have humans in conversation where real life patient experience is being articulated. And we have a series of experts in conversation where it's a conversation about a very specific topic. Mm-hmm. And it's in the Q&A form. So easily digestible information. And then there is always references that they can dig more deeper.
Yeah. So if you are listening to this, whether it's on the podcast or in person, if you have folks that you think that would be great people to interview and experts in their fields in any of those, let us know, because we're always looking for new ones to highlight and to share. So
and can I just say thank you so much for being an amazing, amazing mentor for me and as we build out our community and continuing to be such an amazing founding part of the HLWF Alliance story. Thank you.
Thank you, Rashmi. I thoroughly enjoy it. And thank you for your time today. I appreciate it. And I will talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. Thank you very much.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Software Quality Today. If you like what you just heard, we hope you pass along our web address, procellarx.co, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts and check us out on LinkedIn at ProcellarX. Join us next time for another edition of Software Quality Today.